It's Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019, and this is KBIA's News of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my colleagues, Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, a viral video shows a high school student in a Make America Great Again hat confronting a Native American elder. Or does it? We'll talk about what happened on the National Mall and how it got reported, and how days after the fact, there's a call for everyone to just take a breath. Three incidents in not as many weeks, television news anchors uttering racial slurs on the air. One got fired, the others reprimanded. Was it a slip of the tongue, or is it deeper than that? And what would be the appropriate managerial response in 2019? I'm going to ask Mike and Ernest their opinion. And the 10-year challenge, a fun Facebook meme, or is it a boon for artificial intelligence and facial recognition software? There's a lot more that hopefully we'll get to as well, but we're going to start with the story that has all of Washington. It's been buzzing since late Thursday night, a bombshell report from BuzzFeed that claims former presidential fixer Michael Cohen told special prosecutor Robert Mueller that Donald Trump told Cohen to lie to Congress about the Moscow Trump Tower project. There are a lot of questions about the credibility of the story, though. On Friday, Mueller's office issued a statement refuting much of the story's substance, and the president, well, he had his reaction, too.
The BuzzFeed piece, and maybe equally as bad, the coverage of the BuzzFeed phony story. It was a total phony story. And I appreciate the special counsel coming out with a statement last night. I think it was very appropriate that they did so. I very much appreciate that. I think that the BuzzFeed piece was a disgrace to our country. It was a disgrace to journalism.
Still, BuzzFeed stands behind the reporting. Sunday, editor-in-chief Ben Smith joined one of the reporters on CNN's Reliable Sources to respond to some of those criticisms.
We are eager to understand which characterizations Mueller is talking about there, and obviously we take that incredibly seriously.
You challenged him on Friday night to come out and say what's wrong in the story.
I mean, it was less a challenge than a request for information. Yes. Like, we really would like, we are very
Have you
eager.
Heard from the special counsel?
You know, we have not. I guess we heard sort of through the Washington Post a bit, but we haven't, I think we haven't heard, you know, where the gap is and whether, in you know, what, where we can continue our reporting to close it.
And we're interested in the construction of that statement. In fact, I think Jason Leopold has already sent a formal FOIA request to understand any of the comms behind that. We want to know how that was constructed, why the Deputy Attorney General's office was involved there. We're really keen to learn. We want clarity from the special counsel's office, and we want to learn about the construction of that statement. Who was involved, when, how, where, why?
So here we are just shy of a week since the original publication. And aside from that Mueller statement that was issued through the Washington Post, there really hasn't been anything to refute the story yet. Do you think that's because people are still trying to report it out? Or do you think maybe there is substance to it?
I mean, I think in this instance, the reverse problem is the one we need to focus on at the moment. It's that none of the other news organizations who have the teams working on this story could confirm it, could verify it. And that looks bad for BuzzFeed. Now,
we talked last week about how the Washington Post and the New York Times on the story the previous weekend had managed to do that with each other's work within 24 hours of one another.
And NBC News and New York Times, lots of correspondence on Friday responding on the air to this denial by the special counsel's office were saying, look, we tried. We're working hard on trying to verify this story, and they couldn't do it. Does that mean it's not true? Not necessarily. I mean, BuzzFeed and this team of reporters has had several exclusives with regard to the Moscow Trump Tower story, and those have been accurate stories up until this one. So what's the real question is, what exactly did the special counsel's office, you know, disagree with? They're not saying, and they're probably not going to say.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the... To me, that's one of the key issues is, you know, they sort of refuted without refuting. They said that what BuzzFeed was reporting was not accurate, but they wouldn't say what was not accurate, what is the accurate statement. And so what BuzzFeed is hanging its hat on right now is the fact that the special counsel office has not been clear as to what was particularly wrong with the story. But I think Mike is right. One of the issues here is that usually when you have a scoop, other news organizations are out there trying to, number one, confirm whether or not what was reported is accurate and run with their own stories and to see if they can further the story. We haven't gotten either of those yet. And that sort of puts BuzzFeed in a pretty precarious situation here when it comes to where does this go moving forward? Because right now we're sort of stuck at this. Well, you know, the special counsel has refuted the information that was in your story, but now we don't know what's accurate and what's not
accurate.
Would
you have expected, though, that he would have said what was accurate or what wasn't?
No.
Because then it would have given
no.
away the case.
No, he's not going to do that.
But there was an indication in a Washington Post story that sort of tried to, quote, look behind the scenes of that announcement. And the closest they can come to it without actually quoting the folks in the special counsel's office was to suggest that the concern was over this notion that there were all sorts of documentary evidence from the Trump Organization and elsewhere that the special counsel was using to make the case that Cohen was, you know, corrupted by the president, told a lie. And that, if that's true, that doesn't mean that necessarily the story that the president influenced him is not true. But we will never know because the special counsel has no incentive at this point to go any deeper into it than they did.
And I think we've gotten to a point with the special counsel and the entire investigation where you have news organizations are trying to figure out what's going to be the next bombshell? What's coming out next? And trying to get the jump on everyone else. And so now, you know, any kind of information, any slice that you can put together to make some sort of a coherent story that furthers what's going on right now, you have news organizations that are moving in that direction, trying to get that jump on the competition, you know. But what the real problem here is that the special counsel has been very good at keeping all this information under wraps and presenting it sort of piecemeal, building the case as to what's actually going on here.
There is another factor that harms, you know, BuzzFeed's image in this whole thing, and that's that one of the two reporters, Jason Leopold, who worked on the story, has a past reputation of substance abuse and some stories that weren't just quite up to snuff, and so he's being called on that. He also claimed that he had seen the documentation that's at issue in this report, whereas his colleague, Anthony Cormier, said he hadn't personally seen the document. So there's some questions there, too. But there's one other thing that really concerns me about this is how rapidly every other news organization in the country, without verifying the story themselves, spent an entire day speculating on the meaning of that story.
And I think that's sort of where the president was going here. He actually talked about it. He said it's not just the fact that the story came out. It's all the coverage that the story has gotten and that it gained this sort of traction without any verification on the part of all of these other news organizations. And a lot of it was occurring on the various talk shows that you have going on throughout the day, and very little of it in terms of actual news coverage.
And a lot of what was going on there, too, in some of those discussions centered around BuzzFeed itself. BuzzFeed being a relatively new player in the investigative and the Big J journalism game. This coming a couple of days after some legal rulings about BuzzFeed's decision to publish the dossier a couple months, a year or so back. One of the questions that has come up that people were speculating about, if it turns out this story isn't true or is flawed on some level, is this something that does BuzzFeed in? Is it one of those too many strikes for an up-and-comer to maybe not necessarily show that maybe it's trying to fight above its weight and maybe can't hang?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it's all going to hinge on what ultimately happens in this investigation. Mm-hmm. If say once Mueller brings out his report that part of the story was true, then maybe BuzzFeed can can sort of be able to weather the storm. But a lot of whether or not it's going to be able to play in this investigative journalism realm is going to depend on what kind of reporting they're going to do out, not just on this story, but on other stories that are big of nature.
And whether or not BuzzFeed survives, I'm really concerned about this being another example of where journalists wanted something to be true badly mm-hmm. enough mm-hmm. that they spent an entire day speculating about it being true when it may or may not have been.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was one of those stories where, okay, we can get off of the we can get off to the shutdown for right now. We can really focus in on what's going on with Trump and the investigation, because we think ultimately that's going to be the real big story. And it feeds into this narrative of the press versus the president, and this investigation is ultimately going to bring him down.
Okay, there was another story that broke this weekend that also took a lot of attention away from the shutdown, and now it has many taking a step back and talking about how quick we are to judge, how a single perspective, a single image can incite outrage and reaction. It happened on Friday as the March for Life and the First Indigenous People's March were held simultaneously on the National Mall. And there was an incident between a group of high school students from Covington Catholic High School and a Native American elder. The Washington Post sat down and talked to the man, Nathan Phillips, to hear his description of what happened.
No matter which way we went, we would have to go through that mob. So since I was moving forward, I continued to move forward. And I took that step, and they started moving back. They didn't break their circle, but they started moving back. So I took another step, and they moved back some more. And I took another step, and they moved back. And then they started breaking apart, and I said, okay, I'm going to make my way out of here. I'm just going to go up there to the top of the Capitol, or to the Lincoln Memorial. I'm going to finish my prayer up there. When that young man blocked my retreat, you know, decided to stand in front of me when I was trying to make my way out of there, he put himself in front of me. So I stopped, and I thought, okay, I'm going to take another step, but he wouldn't move. I took another step, he wouldn't move.
The student offered a written statement after the first video went viral that told a very different story. He said that he stood there silently smiling in an attempt to defuse the situation. By smiling, he hoped to show that he wasn't going to get angry, he wasn't going to attack, he was just trying to create and maintain space between the groups. He taped this interview with NBC's Savannah Guthrie, which aired this morning on Today.
The center of the firestorm, what critics characterize as a smirk on Sandman's face. Some saying it was an attempt to stare down Phillips.
What do you think that looks like?
I see it as a smile saying that this is the best you're going to get out of me. You won't get any further reaction of aggression. And I'm willing to stand here as long as you want to hit this drum in my face.
What some people see is a young kid with a smirk on his face.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say for people who see that and are making a judgment about who you are?
Well, people have judged me based off one expression, which I wasn't smirking, but people have assumed that's what I have. And they've gone from there to titling me and labeling me as a racist person, someone that's disrespectful to adults, which they've had to assume so many things to get there without consulting anyone that can give them the opposite story.
There's a lot to unpack here. Questions I had yesterday that after seeing this morning's interview, I almost don't even know what to think anymore, because I don't know. There's part of me that thinks, and I watched the whole 9-minute interview, I don't know that he helped himself with that interview at all.
Well, I mean, it's going to be hard to see where anyone is helping themselves in these interviews, because what's missing here is, to me,
context.
Is a lot of context. Yeah. A lot of context is missing from this, and it's been missing from the beginning. You get the image, and then all of a sudden, judgment pops in. I mean, you could hear it in the way in which people were describing what was going on, even though they weren't there. And when I'm talking to people, I'm mainly talking about the talking heads on the various cable shows. People throwing in their context based on their own judgments or whatever the story is they're crafting in their head based on the images. And we've continued to do that even what, 3 or 4 days past when this incident happened, because we don't really have the full story, and you may not ever get the full story because there were so many groups involved. You had the students, you had the Native American activists, you had the Black Israelites who reportedly were also involved in this, and they're on other videos that have surfaced on this incident. So you've got all of these competing stories that are going on, and mostly everyone's looking at the images and they're hearing the shouting, but you don't have the rest of the story from which to actually pull something.
So your original question as to whether or not the student did himself any good by being on the Today Show, unfortunately, it's like everything else today. The people who want to believe him are going to believe him. The people who don't want to believe him are going to use it as an excuse to say, see, I told you so. But what really bothers me the most about this is the most dispiriting part of it. You can believe whatever you want to believe. You can interpret how that went any way that you like. But the news media, I think, were willingly manipulated into showing the most divisive version of that story.
Right.
They wanted to believe that a Native American elder was being confronted or blocked by these students, that because they were wearing a MAGA hat, that they were also, you know, saying build the wall when there's no video evidence that shows that happens. Yes, a couple of kids in the background were doing a tomahawk chop. Kids are stupid sometimes,
yes,
and they'll do stupid things. But I think the media went in there wanting to have that narrative be a certain way. They were manipulated by a Twitter account that's pretty suspect, that started the virality of that video in the first place.
Which has since been suspended by Twitter.
Yeah. Right, right. I mean, I think Mike is absolutely right. I mean, instead of going in and trying to determine what is the story here, journalists made, you know, basically crafted the narrative in their head and went in to confirm it. And it was all about falling into, as you say, the manipulation of conflict, falling into the manipulation of it fits in with the overall narrative of where we are as a society, where we are as a country. It's the Make America Great Again crowd against the ethnic minority crowd, and then you throw in social media on top of that, mm-hmm. and it all fits right there. The story's already crafted. All I got to do is present it.
And I've heard you lecture so many times on how that is the exact wrong way to go about the construction of a story.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, the kid claims that he bought the MAGA hat while he was there at the mall from a vendor, the people out there hawking things around the mall. He says he didn't bring it with him. And if he hadn't have worn the hat and a couple of his colleagues hadn't worn that, probably this wouldn't have been a story, period.
Right.
But what really also bothers me is this is very much like the story we just talked about. Here's news organizations who spent a day or more interpreting this story without the facts. They didn't do any of their own original reporting. And if they had done so, they would have come up with the more nuanced, you know, characterization of this that we saw after the fact.
But even in trying to pull the story back, they still want to maintain the remnants of the original story, which was false to begin with.
And let's not forget the piece that we mentioned. There's a Twitter account, allegedly by a high school teacher in California, that had 140 tweets a day on average, had 40,000 followers, had a picture that was not the picture of the person. They can't track down the actual person. Does that sound like anything it's like related, say, to the 2016 campaign? Mm-hmm. Here are the media being led around again by social media, and you'd think we would learn not to do that.
Well, I mean, I'm this is not a defense to the media, but a lot of it is airtime. We've got to fill airtime. And here is a story ready made for us to fill the airtime. And we, like you said, Mike, we fall into the trap. And now we're trying to pull it back and say, okay, it's the kids' fault. It's the Native American activists' fault. It's the Black
It's the chaperones' fault for not stepping in and trying to get a group of kids to.
Everybody's getting blamed except the people who are furthering the narrative. And that's us. And that is on journalism. I mean, this is one of those instances where we have to take way more blame for what's going on here than all the other actors
involved.
But Ernest,
it gets clicks. People are going to refresh. It's visual. There's conflict. It's interesting.
I understand, but then we.
I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with you. There's sarcasm dripping from that because it meets a lot of what we would say has news value.
Absolutely, but then we turn around and it hurts our credibility. Mm-hmm. And these are the kinds of things that those who are saying that the media puts out false stories, false narratives, these are the types of things that they use to support their argument.
Okay. Monday's Martin Luther King holiday brought lots of stories and previews about commemorative events. And in three U.S. cities, television viewers found themselves talking about what they heard, not what happened. In Rochester, New York, Baton Rouge, and St. Louis, anchors replaced the civil rights leader's name with a racial slur. Here's KTVI's Kevin Steincross soon after he was made aware of what he had done.
I want to take a moment to apologize. We have heard from a viewer about a mistake I made in our 5 a.m. newscast this morning. In our story about the tribute to Dr. King, I unfortunately mispronounced his name. Please know I have total respect for Dr. King, what he meant and continues to mean to our country. This was not intentional in any way, and I sincerely apologize.
Steincross and Gene Burns, Louisiana anchor, they were both reprimanded by station bosses. The weatherman in Rochester, he was fired. And in all three of these cases, they were Caucasian on-air personalities. The biggest difference has been how each of these was handled. The NAACP in St. Louis is calling for a more stringent action to be taken against Steincross. And at the same time, the guy who was fired up in Rochester is being defended by Al Roker, that it's a slip of the tongue and it happens.
I don't know whether they deserve to be fired. I don't know. I mean, because I don't know all the background behind it. But I'll say this much. Take the most innocent explanation of this, if you want to, and say it was totally by accident, totally a slip of the tongue. What does this say that after year this happens? And about the only time you see news anchors or weathercasters talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it's on the holiday, right? Wouldn't you think that you'd have some sort of policy, or you'd be saying, let's wait a minute, let's make sure we don't do the same stupid thing that other people have done on air before. At the very least, you should be prepared for that so that your folks don't accidentally say something wrong.
Yeah, you know, every time this happens, the first thing that pops in my mind is that, were you watching one of the documentaries on King's life where you hear that phrase all the time, where his last name of King is replaced by Coon? And so you've seen it over and over and over again. And so then you get on the air and you're doing whatever your promo is at the time. And it sort of slips out because you've seen it over and over in these documentaries. That's the only rationale I could think of for why this continues to keep coming up. But going back to Mike, I think he's right. Someone should say, okay, we're going to talk about this. Let's make sure we all get the language right here and we don't make these kinds of mistakes.
I guess the other thing for me is that even if you believe that contrite anchor from St. Louis, I'm really sorry, it's not how I think about Dr. King. Would you acknowledge maybe that there's something there in terms of underlying attitudes and experiences of white males on television, that they should be thinking more about this, that this maybe some thoughts that maybe they're not thinking consciously are bubbling up and coming out on the air anyway?
I mean, you're going to get on the air and you're going to say that you're sorry. You got to give me a little bit more than I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could talk a little bit more about what are some of the things that you're doing and that your station is doing to sort of further build community as opposed to just saying, hey, it was a slip of the tongue, I'm sorry, let's move on. You're going to have to do more than that.
Okay, so I wanted to ask both of you about this last week, but we didn't have enough time. The 6-part Lifetime documentary, Surviving R. Kelly, there wasn't a whole lot in it that was new, but it stirred up things that maybe weren't top of mind for folks, giving new energy to the Mute R. Kelly movement. Now there's some pretty real reactions, pretty real fallout this weekend. RCA dropping him from the record label, criminal investigations starting back up, a manager, somebody involved in his entourage turning himself in on charges. How did it take this long in a documentary on Lifetime?
Because I think for a long time, no one wanted to believe that it was, I don't say no one, but many people did not want to believe that it was true. If you go back, and this is on our links blog, NPR went back and basically did a timeline. Mm-hmm. If you go and look at that timeline, it is startling. Dates
maybe
back
this
almost
is my
20,
Chicago bias. It was like, there's nothing here we didn't know.
There's
it's
nothing here
horrific
we didn't,
to when, hear firsthand, but there's no news here.
It's news when you pull it all together and you present it in a format in which they did, and it's played out over several several episodes, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden people are going, you can start putting the dots together, and people go like, oh, wait a minute, there's got to be something here. So I think it is something there.
Okay, well, before we go, something that may seem lighthearted, fun, it's the 10-year challenge. Put your first Facebook photo side to side next to your current one and take a look. See just how much you may have aged in that time. So if you're watching us on TV or online on Facebook, you may see that right now I participated in the Facebook 10-year challenge and yeah, a few pounds heavier, have some more gray hairs, but I earned every single one of those. This was kind of fun, and usually I don't participate in memes like this because I sometimes worry about some of the information I might be giving up in some of these like checklists or whatever that may be the security answers to questions and stuff like that. But in this one, I kind of figured Facebook already has the data. So they already have the photos. What am I giving up by participating? There's still a whole lot of people that are saying what you're doing is helping them program Facebook or facial recognition software and artificial intelligence.
I mean, honestly, to that argument, I'd say the horse has been out of the barn.
They've had
many,
that photo since
many years.
For 12 years.
And I mean, there are pluses and minuses to having better use of facial recognition mm-hmm. for law enforcement. There's lots of ways people's privacy can be violated. But the deed has been done. Now, I didn't participate in it, and I'm not, you know, as big a sharer on Facebook as some folks. But I did go back to see what I'd been doing 10 years ago on mm-hmm. Facebook. And, you know, I just shaved off a beard, and I had my first graduating class of Convergent students. That's how far back that goes. Started a new job. So the interesting stuff was happening 10 years ago, but nobody wants to see before and after pictures of me. There was one before and after picture I found really good from a former student. So he recently made the transition to she, a transition from male to female. And in his 10-year challenge, her 10-year challenge, posted the photos. And the original one said, I've been reading a book, Understanding Women. And you see a picture there. And then in the 2019 post says, damn y'all, the book works.
To me, there is, you know, the whole facial recognition thing. Mm-hmm. I think that there could be something here that people who are worried about their own security in light of what's going on in terms of your identity being stolen, I do think that there are some issues there that need to be looked at as we move along in this area.
Okay. Well, we are just about out of time for this week. I would like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about each of the topics that we talked about today and a couple we didn't get to. Those are all under the links blog that you sometimes hear us reference under the programs tab at kbia.org. We invite you to like us on Facebook or to follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is @views on KBIA. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, to leave us comments or questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next week, and more. I'd like to take a second to thank RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, and to Aaron Hay for handling the audio. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.